And Elodie and I are going to start blogging. We ask you to watch for an email from us sometime over the next month or two to invite you to that blog. The second thing is a quick note about transferring credits into Williamsburg. Anyone can take the Scholar Project. They don't have to certify. But anyone who wants to certify and be given a certification that they have completed the Lemley Scholar Project, and there's various reasons why they may want to do that. One is if they want to transfer and get a year's credit in Williamsburg. All of those questions about certifying are also online on our website. He has deadlines. Okay, the next announcement, we want to start reaching the youth. They make a two-minute YouTube video about their Commonwealth School or about their Shakespeare class, or about, say, Gobi-Doo, or about anything with vision, mission, ability, and skills, or anything that has to do with their experience in the Scholar Projects, then they can get $50 off their certification fee. They'll just have to meet some specific requirements on those YouTube videos, and so that's going to be put up on the website sometime in the next month. So watch for that opportunity for your students. The next announcement, we have online the community assessment that is in the Library Community Series. A lot of people have been asking us, they ask all the time, what class should I get trained in? Should I teach a youth class? Should I teach an adult scholar project class? So we're putting up a couple of assessments. One that's already up is the community assessment that helps you answer questions about your community and can help the people figure out which scholar project might be a good fit for them and their community. We are also putting up a personal inventory assessment, so we're really excited about that. So sometime in the next couple weeks, peruse the website. But to convey that to new people, yeah, lemmymentortraining.com.
Lemmymentortraining.com or the Lemmy.
Yep, that's right.
Okay.
And then the last announcement is we are really, really excited. We, you know, 12 years ago when Elodie and I started this, 11 years ago, we used to hold youth conferences. They were called Youth for America. Then we started co-sponsoring those with George Wythe, and then now George Wythe doesn't do them, and Tammy Mitchell and her husband run Youth for Freedom. But Lemmy is now offering mini youth conferences. Here's what it consists of. One of the main people who run the simulations at YFF, it's Jim Rhodes, and his son, Jonathan Rhodes, are willing to travel and come out to all of your communities and put on a one-day youth conference / parent conference. This hasn't ever been done. They'll have the youth for the morning session, and then the parents come and join, and there will be a simulation with the parents and the youth, and then the youth go home and the parents stay. So watch out, because it will change your life. And they're willing this year to come out and travel to your communities. I just have to get them booked, and I feel extremely blessed that they've given us their calendar, and Jim's calendar gets filled up rather quickly because he's part of a large health company. They fly him around the world all year long, nonstop. So please get on our website and go to the youth conference section and email us if you think you want to bring them to your community. The price is a really good price. Most everyone in your communities will be able to do it. And Elodie and I are really excited about the opportunity this will be for your families and what it can do for you. Okay, that was a lot of announcements. I don't usually make announcements, Elodie. Are we ready to start?
Yeah, we are.
Okay, awesome. Let's start.
Do you want to introduce the title of our presentation today?
Yes. Okay, this is about the transfer of soul and what legacy are you leaving?
And I'd like to start with a little poem that I think helps us to kind of get started in that direction. Who am I that I should be great? Me, I am nothing unique. Who am I? Of all the millions, the greatness I should seek. I might come up short. I might fail and look dumb. Everything possibly bad. But then again, I might come out strong for knowing myself and giving it all that I had. What should I do? Who am I that God should choose me? Do I have something to give? I will learn and submit to His greatness, that by His greatness I will live. Today, we wanted to spend some time talking to you about the legacy that you are choosing to leave. And I think it's interesting. I don't, legacy is bigger than mission. And I want to talk to you a little bit about that. I want to tell you two stories. One is about Mao Zedong and the other one is about, Gandhi and the legacy that they both left. I think both of them had mission or they had sense of purpose and they did what they did because they had that sense of purpose. But they left something behind them and that was their legacy. Mao Zedong was born in 1893 and he died in 1976. So he lived 82 years. That's a long time. For 30 of his years, he was the absolute power over more than a fourth of the world's population. He was personally responsible for over 70 million peacetime deaths. His reign was wrought with terror, suspicion, political purges, famines, cultural destruction, and economic damage. He was the author of two very destructive and powerful Chinese campaigns, the Great Leap Forward and the Cultural Revolution. The Great Leap Forward in 1958 through 1961 was a socio-economic plan to drive the Chinese civilization from a primarily privately owned agricultural society to a collectively owned agriculture and industrial society, from private to collective. Private farming and private industry was prohibited, and those who engaged in it were struggled against through public struggle sessions, social pressure, and extreme violence. It ended in disaster, triggering a widespread famine, resulting in 30 million deaths. The Cultural Revolution was between 1966 and 1976. This was Mao's attempt to eliminate the liberal bourgeoisie from the Communist Party and the country. He instituted the Red Guard, which was a terrorist organization, youth organization, that had carte blanche permission to barge into people's homes and ransack and torture the owners. Their slogan was out with the olds, the four olds, and in with the new. Old customs, old habits, old culture, and old ideas were out. Mao is revered in China today as a great revolutionary, transforming the world, the country from an agrarian society into a major world power. He achieved this reputation through the strategy of cult personality. The cult of personality arises when a country's leader uses mass media to create an idealized and heroic public image, often through unquestioning flattery and praise. Mao had an intense classical education. In his very early years, he learned to read, which was exceptional for a Chinese child born to a peasant, as a peasant. At 8 years old, he began schooling at home with a tutor. He memorized long passages of Confucius and other great Chinese authors and poets. He learned language, history, and poetry. He learned a classical calligraphy, writing style. He was a voracious reader, often reading far into the night. He didn't get along very well with his tutors because he didn't want to submit to their requests. He was asked to leave at least three schools because of his insubordination. Yet he was diligent in his studies. He hated hard work. He adored his mother, who doted over and indulged him. He hated his father and learned how to manipulate him by feigning suicide if he ever tried to force him to work. Because as he said, fathers do not want to lose their oldest sons. This is their weakness, and I attack at all weak points. He did not stay long at any school, but he discovered the provincial library and spent countless hours there poring over the Western texts. Eventually, he did go to a teacher's college where he was encouraged to think new ideas and freely organize themselves into study groups. It is here that he was introduced to anarchism, nationalism, and Marxism. One of his teachers noted that he did not have any special leadership qualities. He said, Mao has no special talent for leadership. When he tried to form a club, he put up notices and no one came. And then he tried to do it again, and some people came, and they didn't elect him as the leader. But Mao did know how to usurp power and leadership. When his comrade Jung's army joined up with Mao's army, he quickly attached him to his weak point and undermined his authority by lying about his behavior to headquarters and got him expelled from his post, putting himself in as general and commander of the army. He understood that his power would come through the leadership of the army, through threats and death and destruction. As a youth, he believed that the nature of people of the country is inertia. They worship hypocrisy, are content with being slaves and narrow-minded, he said. We should burn all the collections of poetry and prose after the Tang and Song dynasties. At age 29, he read Systems of Ethics by Frederick Paulson and adopted this I-centered moral code. I'm thinking that's very Randian, the I-centered moral code. Believing that the core of morality is the self, he said, I do not agree with the view that to be moral, the motive of one's action has to be benefiting others. Morality does not have to be defined in relations to others. People like me, he said, want to satisfy our hearts to the full, and in doing so, we automatically have the most valuable moral codes. Of course, there are people and objects in the world, but they are all there for me. Mao shunned all constraint of responsibility and duty. He said, people like me only have a duty to ourselves. We have not duty to other people. I am responsible only for the reality I know and absolutely not responsible for anything else. I don't know about the past. I don't know about the future. They have nothing to do with the reality of my own self. He says, some say one has a responsibility for history. I don't believe it. I am only concerned about developing myself. I have my desire and act on it. I'm responsible to no one else. A good name after death cannot bring me any joy because it belongs to the future and not to my own reality. People like me are not building achievements to live for future generations. Is this interesting? These attributes he reserved for great heroes like himself. Everything outside their nature, such as restrictions and constraints, must be swept away by the great strength of their nature. When great heroes give full play to their impulses, they are magnifying, powerful, stormy, and invincible.
Wow.
Their power is like a hurricane arising from a deep gorge and like a sex maniac in heat and prowling for a lover. There is no way to stop them, he said. He justified his actions by saying, all considerations must be purely calculations of oneself and absolutely not for obeying external ethical codes or for so-called feelings of responsibility. He took joy in upheaval and destruction. He said, giant wars will last as long as heaven and earth will never become extinct. The ideal of a world of great equality and harmony, the Tong, which is him, Mao Zedong, is mistaken. He asked, how do we change China? He answered, the country must be destroyed and then reformed. This applies to the country, the nation, and to mankind. The destruction of the universe is the same. People like me long for its destruction because when the old universe is destroyed, a new universe will be formed. Isn't that better? He was easily offended and sought revenge. He was a good writer and penned many pamphlets and newsletters that he distributed to communist followers. Ultimately, it was the power of his pen and manipulation of his words that put him into the position of power and left him responsible with 70 million deaths on his hand.
Oh, my. Wow. Okay, and
legacy.
That just reminds me of the conversation that you and I had the other day when we asked the question, do people get the type of government they deserve? And we were talking, and I said, you know what? Leaders can actually make a difference, and it doesn't mean the people deserve. Just even thinking of the legacy that Reagan left, you know, he went in and he really made it so that private business could thrive. And he convinced, he knew how to go to the people and get the people to lobby Congress. And he increased people's income because of the policy that he was able to put in place. And it was because of his leadership. Mao's leadership, you know, 70 million people didn't deserve to die. Sometimes I'm just really saddened when people think that everybody always gets what they deserve, but the truth is that leaders have impact.
Yeah.
And they have a power to leave a legacy in a way that increases in number, you know. Okay, so the transfer of soul, that just was icky. When you read some of this quote, that was icky. That was so icky. That was terrible. I don't like the transfer of that. I mean, that was
that's
icky.
That's a real interesting transfer of soul, right?
And yeah, I mean, you know, of course, I'm not going to live icky like that, but it's the transfer of soul is a real thing. You know, when we have our little 12-year-olds in Key of Liberty reading about the Cultural Revolution and little Ji Li Jiang and how she idolized him and how confused she was when all she wanted to be was part of the Red Guard, and yet the Red Guard was so awful, but she didn't have the power to think. She said later that she was so brainwashed, she didn't even know to say bad or good. You know, she didn't know to say they're bad. She just thought, I'm bad because I'm not part of them. What's wrong with me? And I'm bad because my grandparents owned land.
And,
you know?
And she was completely influenced by Mao's life.
Oh, yeah, his transfer definitely.
Mao was leaving.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, would you like me to give you a happier story?
Yes, okay, tell us a happier story now.
Okay. Mohandas Gandhi's motto was, first change myself and the world will follow. His philosophy must have held some truth since that was indeed his focus. And through that focus, he brought about Indian independence from British imperialism without war. Self-respect and equality for his people in South Africa, and appealed to English sentiments so that they might change the way many of their policies towards the Indians. It is estimated that he improved the lives of over 100 million people. Isn't that fascinating?
That's fascinating.
Two great men. One caused the deaths of 70 million, and one improved the lives of 100 million.
You know, I just have to interrupt you for 2 seconds and share that sometimes we think that greatness is defined by numbers. I mean, here we are sharing an example of two men that really hit the numbers, right?
Yeah.
More and more than ever before, Anality, I keep on feeling that we must think of the one and must realize that it's the one that matters. In our little classrooms, we might only have 5 students. Those 5 matter.
Yeah.
In our homes, we might have one that's pulling our heartstrings, and that we have to set up every system in our home just to keep them on, help them stay on track and find themselves. That one matters. So as we share these things about these people who reached, you know, millions, please don't ever forget that it's truly the one.
Yeah.
Truly, truly, in all the efforts that we make to, sometimes people can feel like a failure because they're not reaching 1,000, they're not reaching 100, or sometimes it's just not about the numbers. Okay, keep going, Anality.
Okay. At the age of 24, after receiving a prestigious education in England, Gandhi traveled to South Africa to practice law. When he arrived there, he was appalled at the treatment of the Indians. Gandhi made a crucial decision after being thrown off the train shortly after arriving in the country because he was black. He decided that he was not going to stand for that kind of treatment. Gandhi came from a merchant class in India and had a very high station. He had not been used to being treated like this by the English. After giving it much thought, Gandhi decided to launch a resistance movement against the mistreatment of Indians. He coined a word which he believed was in keeping with the Buddha's nonviolence of the middle way philosophy. It was satyagraha, which comes from the combination of 3 words, sat, which means openness, honesty, and fairness, and truth. Ahimsa, refusal to inflict injury on others. Tapasya, willingness to self-sacrifice. A satyagrahi, one who practices satyagraha, must be willing to shoulder any sacrifice which is occasioned by the struggle which they have initiated. Rather, they push such sacrifice or suffering onto their opponent, lest the opponent become alienated and access their own portion of truth. Access to their portion of truth become lost. So basically he's saying he doesn't want to infringe on anybody else's space to be able to get truth. And if the opponent is feeling attacked or under stress because there's a confrontation, that person is less likely to get truth that he needs. He said, the great mystics show us how to learn to travel deep into ourselves and remake ourselves. When you lose yourself to find yourself, when you live for your own pleasures and profit you, you will never find yourself. His friends and colleagues all agreed that Gandhi exhibited no natural organizing capacity. Isn't this interesting? Two people who did not have any natural leadership skills. It's fascinating to me. He could not speak. He could not stand on a platform. He was soft-spoken and reserved. But as he began to forget himself more and more and look to those around him, more and more convictions began to come. With this conviction came the courage to finally speak out. He tells a story about the first time he had to stand and speak in front of a large crowd. His knees ached because he forced them not to buckle. His hands trembled. His ears were ringing. He was so fearful. Yet he began to gather large groups of Indians and ask them to come more, become more and better. He had a great desire to nurse his people. Once he even nursed a leper to whom no one would come near. In the early 1900s, he was quite wealthy, making the annual income of $30,000 a year. He felt it was his duty and obligation to mankind to give it away. He started an ashram, a type of Hindi settlement where a person or a group of people lived religiously in seclusion. He always said that it was in the ashram that he always learned life's most valuable lessons, and he felt safe to make mistakes and fail among his friends in his community. Isn't that beautiful?
Wow.
Gandhi always believed that an unjust law must be broken.
Pretty interesting.
An unjust law must be broken. But that the lawbreaker must be willing to submit to the full penalty of the law. After he led several resistance campaigns against the unjust treatment of the Indian peasants, he was accused of sedition and arrested on the charges that he was trying to lead the Indian people to revolt. His opponents went to the great pains to document the details of his behavior and launched an assault of violations at him to convince the court that he was guilty. After the presentation of the charges and the argument was presented, to which Gandhi made one objection, in which they accused him of leading the Indian people to insurrection for the last 8 years, he stood up and politely objected, saying, "I protest. I have been leading these people to insurrection for the last 20 years.
That's great.
He then proceeded to tell them that they had wasted their time presenting such a detailed case against him because he was admitting to all the charges, and he demanded the full penalty of the law. The judge had great compassion on his very polite, unassuming, humble man. He was troubled as to what to do with this beautiful man. He admitted that he knew that he stood in the presence of a great leader. Yet he felt that he must follow the law. Gandhi said to him, "If you find me guilty a violation of a just law, please sentence me to the highest penalty of the law. But if you believe in any way that this law is unjust and violates the dignity of mankind, come down from your bench and join me in my cause."
Oh my gosh.
The judge did not come down and sentenced him to 6 years in prison. Gandhi said, violence begets violence, nonviolence resistant achieves its goal. Hatred does not cease by hatred at any time. Hatred ceases only by love. Love and skill combined can make a masterpiece. Not love alone, not skill alone.
Very, very interesting. That's very interesting. Character and competence.
Yes. There you go. Character and competence. He taught that the aggressor or captivator was in much worse situation than the tortured or the captive. He said that our greatest problem with people around the globe was violence. Violence between nations, war, violence on the streets, violence in our homes, violence in the communities, and violence.
Aren't you so glad that our TGYC students are going to think about this and answer hard questions?
I know.
Like, when is violence good? And if we're asking them to think about that, it's so fun. Sorry, I don't mean to interrupt. My daughter did this. Some of those essays, and it's so fun having these conversations with her and making her think.
I know it. So I love that he says violence in our own hearts. I really want to ponder through that and try to figure out what he means by that.
Wow.
It will destroy a person and the nations. It must be controlled, and only one who can control it, the only one who control it is ourselves. People must begin to realize that nonviolence is a great force on earth because it requires the greatest courage and determination to stand resolute in the face of overwhelming odds. While Gandhi was in jail, and the Indian government was having a great problem with civil unrest and small conflicts rising up all over the country, they visited Gandhi in prison and offered to release him if he would help them with the problems. His reply to them was quite unexpected. He said, I will only help you under my terms and my conditions. There is to be no violence. Otherwise, I am quite comfortable having a little vacation here in prison. I'm getting so much needed rest and catching up on my reading. They agreed to his conditions. To Gandhi, what Gandhi did had never been attempted on a large scale. This was daring for a man. He changed the direction of human progress by showing us that we can only lead to destruction and what he calls ahashmis. Living nonviolent can lead to complete victory over violence. We in the United States have been blessed by his philosophy and deeds as Martin Luther King Jr. was influenced by Gandhi. King's version of Satyagraha was soul force, and in South Africa, Nelson Mandela used his nonviolent non-cooperation strategy. It is quite a phenomenon that a young man with very little natural leadership ability developed into one of the most innovative, influential people of the 20th century.
Wow. Okay, are we ready to ask some of our questions?
Yes, let's do. Wait, you were going to share a poem.
Okay, let me share the poem in just a minute. Anelody and I thought about it, and we wanted to talk to all of you who are working in the classrooms and working in your schools and in your homes. And she brought this up because she was telling me, she called me and she said, Tiffany, I'm so grateful that The Student Whisper has finally been published, because the principles of obtaining this kind of education and then turning around and mentoring others is shown in a story. And I think about I think about that, about the stories that have changed my life, the literature that I read and what comes to me in story. And you're sharing your story with your students. And there's a transfer of soul there. And the question that we have for you is, have you thought about the legacy that you're leaving? Have you thought about the legacy, the transfer of soul? And legacy can be a lot of things. It can be money. It can be position. It can be whatever. I'm talking about the legacy that is embodied in the transfer of soul.
I'd love to know if when you were a student under Dr. Mill, were you thinking about the legacy you were going to leave, the transfer of your soul into this world? When you were publishing the book, did you think about the legacy you were going to leave? Was that even on your mind? Was it in your radar?
Well, I know that when we were writing, it was absolutely in my heart about what mattered most to me and if I could, what would I share if I could share anything? Just like with our students, you know, if I see, like when my daughter, when she asks that question, when she reads about John Brown and she reads about Abraham Lincoln and she reads about Gandhi and she reads about Martin Luther King Jr. and Martin Luther, she reads about them and she asks questions, she's thinking certain thoughts. What's more powerful than that? There's a few ways to answer your question. One, when I was a student, I was so focused on learning and the transfer of soul was coming into me. I was just soaking it all up from all the classics I was reading, the learning, the questions that my mentors were asking me to think about. I was just learning. When Oliver and I were writing, I was absolutely thinking about what legacy am I leaving, what transfer of soul could happen, what could I share, what questions can I ask.
So what you're saying is that you didn't really consider what legacy you were leaving until you were through some of the process of learning. And you were actually writing.
Well, I had things I wanted to share, even when I was learning. I didn't have the word legacy. I didn't have that word at all, and I didn't have the word, I don't know what words I had. I knew I had things I wanted to share and thoughts and meaningful little teeny calls of stuff that had changed me and that I wanted to pass on. So I had mission. And mission is part of legacy. Legacy is the fulfillment of mission. So I had mission. I did not have the language yet. And language is very powerful. I didn't have the language yet. I asked the question right now, and this is one of our questions for you, because this is big for us to really understand the power of this. What legacy has an ancestor of yours left you? Everybody think about this for just a minute. And like I said, I'm not talking about the other legacies of position or wealth or stuff like that. I'm talking about some simple things like a train of thought. Think about your family. Do you have a certain train of thought that you know has been handed down and handed down and handed down? And this is what's crazy. This is going to come in two categories.
I got to tell you, Tiffany, I just had a huge epiphany. I have to share this.
Okay.
Thank you for asking me that question. Down to the tips of my toes and to the top of my head, I know that the reason why I do what I do is because my mother set an example for me. Because I can remember coming home from school almost every single day, and the table was spread with books that she was studying. And you know, when I was 12 and 13 and 14, 15 years old, that it did not, it, it,
I didn't get it.
It didn't seem like it was going to impact you.
Yeah.
But it has. And here's the category it's going to be. A way to see the world, or a train of thought, or a perception, anything like that. This could fall in the category of not serving you and not leading you to be your best and to happiness, or it can fall into the category of, yes, it's serving you. But just think for a minute about your families, about your brothers and sisters, about your parents, about your ancestors, and write down some of the legacy you've received. What's a way you think you behave because of that? I started asking myself this, and I found three categories of knowing the legacy from my ancestors. One of them is the oral tradition. We are storytellers, and things are passed on through the stories that have been handed down and handed down and handed down. And they're real. And some are serving us, and some aren't serving me. So some of my legacy is passed down through the oral tradition. And then some of it is passed down, this is the awesome part, some of it is passed down through writing. I have journals of several of my ancestors. And that is a very, very powerful legacy, because not only then do I have the example of from father to son, or mother to daughter, whatever that goes, but I actually have the words that I can choose, there's a story that I read in one of my grandfather's journals, and this is six generations back, and I have his journal, and there were three stories in this that make up a guiding part of who I am, the legacy that he has left me because he left a journal, and through stories, through things that he wrote about, I've chosen certain ways that I'm living because of what he wrote. And actually, they were mistakes he made. And it's not like he said, okay, let me tell you about three mistakes I made. I mean, these were just little stories that were interspersed in his journal, and they all taught me the same lesson, the same character trait. And it was because of mistakes he had made. He left me a legacy because he wrote about it. And so, what trains of thoughts do you have? What ways do you see the world because an ancestor has left you a legacy? Another question, I'm going to read a poem before I ask these next two questions. And we do want to have time for question and answer. Okay.
Can I just make a comment about that?
Yes.
This is real stuff. I mean, I'm just thinking about some of the negative things that are come down through our ancestry. You know, alcoholism is a real thing. I'm not talking necessarily about alcoholism, but I that's one of the things that have been identified, that it really does is passed down through our example. But these are real things. If we spend time to think about it, you know, we will be able to identify that.
Yeah, why we do the things we do. Okay, so, but the question is, why do you think the way you think? What legacy have you inherited, and what parts are serving you, and what parts aren't serving you? That's one of the questions. I'm going to go ahead and read this wonderful poem. It's one of my favorites. It's by Edgar Gay Guest, and it talks exactly about what we're talking about. It's called It Takes a Heap of Livin'. It takes a heap of livin' and a house to make it home. A heap of sun and shatter, and you sometimes have to roam before you really appreciate the things you left behind. And hunger for 'em somehow, with 'em always on your mind. It don't make any difference how rich you get to be, how much your chairs and tables cost, how great your luxury. It ain't home to you, though it be the palace of a king. Until somehow your soul is sort of wrapped round everything. Home ain't a place that gold can buy or get up in a minute. Afore it's home, there's got to be a heap of living in it. Within the walls, there's got to be some babies born. And then right there, you got to bring them up to women good and men. And gradually, as time goes on, you find you wouldn't part with anything they ever used. They've grown into your heart. The old high chairs, the playthings, too. The little shoes they wore, you hoard. And if you could, you'd keep the thumb marks on the door. You've got to weep to make it home. You've got to sit and sigh and watch beside a loved one's bed and know that death is nigh. And in the stillness of the night, to see death's angel come and close the eyes o'er her that smiled and leave her sweet voice dumb. For these are scenes that grip the heart. And when your tears are dried and tugging at you always at the pleasant memories of her that was and is no more, you can't escape from these. You've got to sing and dance for years. You've got to romp and play and learn to love the things you have by using them each day. Even the roses round the porch must blossom year by year before they come a part of you, suggesting someone dear who used to love them long ago and trained them just to run the way they do so they would get the early morning sun. You got to love each brick and stone from cellar up to dome. It takes a heap of living in a house to make it home. On the home front, what legacy are you leaving? What is the transfer of your soul? What part of you are you transferring? Truth is all of you. And in the classroom front, what legacies are you leaving? We think about this through what is your example showing? What are your words showing? What are your questions showing? And Ellie, how would you feel if we open it up for question and answer? And just to talk with everybody for a little while on our...
The big thing that I really wanted to do today, Tiffany, is give everyone an opportunity to just ponder over what is the legacy, what is the transfer of soul that we are leaving. Not even, I mean, there's the transfer of soul, the legacy we're leaving, and the one we want to leave. And if we consciously make the decision about what we want to leave, our lives will begin to live that. We will begin, if we consciously set the vision, we will head toward that direction. I was surprised. I recently had this amazing opportunity to reconnect with my old boyfriend from high school. He was my first love, and anyway, it's an interesting story. We lost track of each other, and he was such a good friend of mine, and he moved to Japan. He got married, had children, and I didn't know where he was. Well, recently he Facebook friended me, and I was so excited I was able to reconnect with him. And reconnecting with him made me realize this huge epiphany that when I was 16 years old, he and I talked a lot about, we were very philosophical, and I had decided when I was 16 years old the path I was going to take. And he and I started talking about the things we'd talked about and the dreams and aspirations we had at the age of 16, and I realized I lived them out, and I'd forgotten I guess I didn't really forget. I just didn't continue reviewing that, oh, that's where that came from. But I know right now I'm living my life the way and in the direction I talked about when I was...
It happened at that young age.
Yeah, because he and I had this conversation. I will tell you exactly what it was. He and I have these long conversations about about why we exist and what and why we're here on this earth. And one of the things that we decided was that we wanted to love as God loved. And what I think is interesting, I mean, we talked hours and hours and hours about that. And what I think is interesting, I've had people say to me, Melody, I don't know anybody who loves like you do. And I'd forgotten that at the age of 16, he and I created this big, huge vision of who we wanted to be when we grew up. When we consciously talk about it, when we consciously write it down, we become it. And these are the kinds of things that we need to be sharing with our students.
Something that's amazing about the age that we work with, the 12 to 16-year-olds, the 11 to 16-year-olds, sometimes even reaching at 17, in the leadership model, this is the first time they have a formal mentor outside of the home, generally, you know. And the mentor is a partner with the parents in shaping and giving a vision of who these kids are. I think it's always fascinating. You know, what takes place between those ages is huge, 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 huge. Okay. I'm just thinking about, you know, the physiological changes that go through the kids when they go through puberty. And, you know, this is the first, their brains are changing, and everything that they've experienced so far in Cora's love of learning phases, they re-go through in practice scholar phase. They relearn how not to burp at the table. They have to relearn and choose again that they're not going to hit people when they get upset. They have to choose again. Basically, they don't see themselves as an appendage from mom and dad anymore. They're their own person, and they have to remake many, many, many choices. And this practice and apprentice scholar phases are so important. And parents can't do it alone because the kids require a peer group and outside mentors. And what a beautiful, beautiful role each of us have in helping each other provide this environment that can really give the kids the best opportunity for growth. Okay. We've told some stories about Mal and about Gandhi and about some of the legacy that they left. We've asked a couple questions to you about thinking about what legacy you have inherited from your ancestors and about what legacy you want to pass on to others. Let's just open this up for comments and some of the things that we would love to hear from you are, if you could share with us what's happening in your classroom and what you see taking place, what transferred soul are you watching before your eyes? Do you feel like what you're doing is working? All you have to do is press 5-star, and I will unmute your line.
Of course.
Okay, you there, Sherry? Hi.
I want to comment.
Okay.
So there are a couple of things I want to say. One, I want to start with the transfer of soul that you see in the classroom. I would have to say in my classrooms I have seen it sometimes, but I would want to caution mentors that if they don't see their students changing before their eyes, not to worry. Sometimes the transfer of soul takes a few years. You know, we just heard that Anelody just had this aha about her mother and how her mother had kind of set her up for what she's doing now. And she just really saw that. And sometimes it takes students, I'm not saying it took Anelody that long to figure out that she should be doing that, but, you know, sometimes it will take your students a couple years for them.
Oh, you're so right. It's almost imperceptible.
It is imperceptible, and that because you know how when you can almost see it more in other people's, like the students you're teaching, rather than your own children. And sometimes it takes years for things to sink in. And you still see, you know, as I have mentored students for probably 7 or 8 years now, I can see things in them and see them doing things that I know were seeds that got started when we started doing these scholar projects. And so I think that, you know, sometimes you can see it in their papers as they're writing and as they're maturing. Sometimes you can see it as they begin to, you ask them, especially if you have kids who are leaders but who are also very active and gabby and things like that, you can see that if you go to them and have a conversation and say, you know, whether or not you want to be a leader, you really do are, and the class is following you, and can you, you know, you have that kind of conversation with them, can you please, you know, help me to lead the class in this direction, and you can see them do it in bits and starts, you know. So that's one thing, and I can definitely say, because I've been mentoring so long, that I have seen students do all kinds of amazing things that didn't seem were really possible for them when they started, especially in Key of Liberty and Shakespeare, and that has been a wonderful thing. But what I really want to share is some of the legacy that I have from my family. And that is my father. When we started getting to college age, always, for all three of us in my family, wanted us to get a liberal arts education. And even then, you know, when I was going to school in 1973, almost everybody else I knew was going to huge universities, and I went to this little tiny, 500 students, liberal arts college, and I knew that it was the right thing for me, and I didn't look at anything that was over, like, 2,000 students, but I knew I wanted to be at a small school. And so I'm so thankful for that legacy that my father passed down, because it has it has made a huge difference in my life, and it's something that my husband kind of inadvertently got a liberal arts education, although he did it a very different way, and so that is something that we have been trying to pass down to our own children as well. And my mother was not an educated person, but she loved life, and she loved people, and she loved to cook. And she taught us to cook and to entertain and to serve people. And as I look back, and I look at all three of my brothers and sisters, I mean, when my mother died, she died young. I remember the first Thanksgiving. I mean, there was almost like World War III in the kitchen as to who was in charge, because my mother had always been in charge, of course. And my brother thought, even though he was the youngest, that he was in charge because he lived right next door. And my sister thought, well, I'm the in-town woman. I should be in charge. And I was the oldest, so I thought I was in charge. But anyway, we were all in the kitchen cooking together. And, you know, so, and those are things that as my parents are both gone now, and so are my husband's parents, and so I have really thought about this question, because I have looked for the good in their lives and tried to continue to tell those stories to our children and to try to model some of those things. And I think that the way that you live your life is really the legacy that you leave behind. And if you're willing, I've also unfortunately gone through, in the last 2 weeks, I've had two very, very dear friends lose their children who were young adults. And so it has
you mean
made
they died?
Me realize, pardon me? Yeah.
You have two friends who their children died?
Yes.
Oh.
And one was 26 and one was 19. And both by completely freak accidents, too. And you know, they shouldn't have died, but they did. And it has made me realize we just have to forgive people. Whether they forgive us or not, we have to forgive people. We have to love them. We need to...
That's part of your legacy, isn't it, Sherry?
Yeah, that is. Overlook the small things. And as one of the leaders...
I can feel it when you say it.
When one of the leaders in my church said this past weekend, we had a big conference, he said, leave it alone. He said, you know, when things happen, say you're sorry and leave it alone. Just move on. Life is too short.
Wow. Wow, Sherry, I can feel it when you say that. I thank you so much. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, who else would like to share? Rebecca.
So my name is Rebecca, and I'm teaching a five-pillar course. And I think what's happened in this class, I actually had a say-go-be-do, and really felt strongly that I needed to invite someone to come to this class. And this woman that I invited is not even, she's just married 2 years, no children, and I invited her to come. And it's amazing what has happened in her coming to this class. And she said, she shared with me that it was, she was given a special blessing in November that she would be given this opportunity to study, and she didn't know really what that meant. And it was during one of our classes where it just occurred to her that this is what it was, that this invitation to come and study in this five-pillar course was an answer to this blessing. And through our reading of these different classics and discussing, so much healing has taken place for her that it's just been incredible to see that, and you know, she's shared a lot with me, and it's been wonderful. And so I'm finding through the five-pillar course, at least for me, well, boy, it's changing me. It's changing the wonderful women that are participating in it, and we're a small group. But I just feel like it's preparing me then to know what I need to do for my children. My children are still young. They're not even in the Scholar Projects yet, but I'm feel like I'm really getting myself prepared for when they get to that place where, you know, where they're studying things that I'll be able to just have great intellectual conversations with them. Because, you know, I never viewed myself that way, but this course has really changed me and is changing
Rebecca,
others.
I'm so glad that you're sharing, because sometimes I see people who are really new to TJN, and they're asking the familiar question, yeah, but how do I do this? How do the classics mentor me? And that sometimes people spend a lot of years on their own with the classics trying to make it work. And I am so glad you shared about your experience choosing to put yourself on the line and turn around and be a mentor to others. And through the five pillar, and share that experience that you're having with this friend that you followed. I mean, that's a risk. You know, she could have told you no, you know what I mean?
Right.
And yet you're out there moving through your scholar phase because you are turning around and helping others through theirs. It's so fulfilling. It's such a better way than just only always being on the receiving side. That makes sense?
Yeah.
Well, but to risk and to be on the giving side, it's so much more fulfilling.
Yeah, and I'm starting to realize that, you know, I have geniuses, and there are things that I'm just starting to realize that there's greatness in me and that I can give, and because I always just think that others had all of this, and through this course, I'm realizing who I am and what I have to offer and what God's created me for. And it's just been, it's transformed my life. So it's been wonderful. It's been a wonderful experience.
Oh, I'm glad you shared. Rebecca, tell me your last name. I have to know who you are.
A. Kester. Rebecca A. Kester.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Okay, we've got someone else who's raised their hand. And, That's Raina.
Hi, Tiffany.
Hey, Raina. Hi.
Yes, hello. Well, I just have to say something because my life has completely changed, and it has changed for the better since I started mentoring these classes. At first, I was doing it because I knew I went to the Student Whisper seminar at George Wythe. And as I was sitting there and I was taking my notes, I had this overwhelming feeling that I had to create an environment for my kids, and specifically one of my children, and that I had to go back to my home and get my homeschool families, you know, my friends together, and create something. And I knew I had to do something, and I hadn't even heard of Lemmy. And I can't believe, but I'm just so, I feel so overwhelmingly blessed that I was led to you and Anality, and I talked to Anality on the phone. We got training, and now we have a Commonwealth, and the impact on not only my life, but the students in my Commonwealth and the families is overwhelmingly, I can't even describe what it has done for our community. I want to cry about it because it's so awesome. And what it's done for my life. And I've been able to actually come face to face with myself and change myself and become a better person and the person I know God created me to be. And I just want to thank you for all you have done in my life. And I know that these projects are inspired and that they do change lives. And I'm just so grateful for it.
Raina, thank you. You're making me miss you.
Well, I can't wait to see you guys this summer. It's going to be great.
I'll have to let you know when I come to St. George.
Yes.
Oh, thank you. I just don't know what to say.
Well, I just want to thank you. I feel so blessed, and every time I get so excited every time there's a conference call or there's anything, I yearn to be better and learn more and try to that transfer of soul. I had a student the other day. We were having a mentor meeting, and we were talking about archetypes. I had them do the archetype activity, and he was telling me something very, you know, I said, so what was your archetype, if you don't mind sharing, you know? And he said, well, and one of them was a slave. And I said, why do you feel this way? And we had this whole conversation, and he's the youngest brother of the two that are living at home, and he, you know, he kind of, and I can see this going on in their
relationship.
Yeah.
Wow.
And I was able to help him realize also, because him and his brother go round and round with each other, but, and it wasn't me, it was the question thing of it just an inspiration that came to me. I asked him this question. I said, do you feel like maybe your brother feels the same way as you do? And he sat there for like 2 minutes, and I could tell it changed his paradigm completely. And, you know, just in that moment, and seeing him since then, and the way he treats his brother, and the way he is patient with his brother, it's just amazing. And I wouldn't have been able to do that if I hadn't been in that situation of mentoring him. And
yeah.
I know it's going to change their family, you know. I know it's going to change it for good.
Just for others, just in case they don't know, there is a chapter in the Student Whisperer that goes through archetypes. And you can find the ones that you're living and choose the ones you want to be more like. It's a very good chapter that can teach you a lot about yourself. Thank you. Raina, that's wonderful. Thank you for being willing to share. We have time for one more person to share. If you'd like to, you can press 5-star. Okay. Looks like there's not anyone else who'd like to share, so we'll just wrap it up. And right now is a great time if any of you have feedback for what your needs are as schools, as mentors, what your needs are in the classroom, anything you feel about the website. Like I said, we're taking lots of feedback right now and transforming the website to be able to be more clear and meet the needs of those who come so they can find out what it is we do. And I want to thank all of you for just a second. I want you to know that it is through your efforts that other people find out about the Scholar Projects and the opportunity to mentor and move through the scholarship ladders the way that these Scholar Projects help people to do. It really is because of your efforts, the way you share with people, the way you explain with people. And Melanie and I have never been really, really, really strong at marketing. Really, things are passed from word of mouth. It's because of your invitation to others, and we just really thank you. We have always recognized and known that it's from word of mouth that things get shared. And Melody and I love to teach, and we're mentors and we're teachers, and we do advertise and market. But the truth is most of the people find out about these things through you, and I thank you for that. I appreciate you being willing to share with others. Yes.
Can I wrap up with my poem?
Yes.
Tiffany and I decided we were going to do poetry today. I heard this poem first from one of my leaders in my church, and I heard it again this recently, and I just think it's so poignant and true.
Perfect way to end.
All of us here on this call need to be ever so vigilant about who we are and what we're doing. Make the choice. Do we want to be a Mao or do we want to be a Gandhi? And we all have the potential to wreak havoc or to save lives and to liberate the captive, depending on our choice and our choices. 'Twas a sheep, not a lamb, that strayed away in the parable Jesus told. A grown-up sheep that strayed away from the 90 and the 9 in the fold. And why for the sheep should we seek and earnestly hope and pray? Because there is danger when sheep go wrong. They lead the lambs astray. Lambs will follow the sheep, you know. Wherever the sheep may stray, when sheep go wrong, it won't take long till the lambs are so far away and as wrong as they. And so, when the sheep we earnestly plead, the sake of the lambs today, for when sheep are lost, what a terrible cost the lambs will have to pay.
Thank you, Melody. For any of you that need to go now, you can. We've got someone who raised their hand. They have a question.
Hi, Tiffany. It's Sean.
Oh, hi, Sean.
I just had a question. You commented about Jim and Jonathan and the youth conferences that they were doing and mentioned it's on the website. I cannot find it on the website, so I'm thinking maybe we can shoot out a post to the Yahoo group so that people who want to have that opportunity can find the information for it.
Okay, yeah, and I'll put the link right into the place on the website. And we are rearranging things, and so I wonder if we unpublish the page or if it's just not in a good mapping yet. I think it's more likely that it might not be in a good mapping yet to find it. I think it might be under youth conferences.
I can't find
that
anything.
That sounds great.
Conferences.
I'll take a look at that. I'm so glad you brought that to my attention.
Because I know there's a lot of people that want to do that, so I wanted to make sure it's easy
to
find.
Yeah, okay. I'll send that out to the Yahoo group then. Thanks, Sean.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Awesome. Thank you, everyone. You guys all have a wonderful, wonderful day. And we'll see you later. And sign up for trainings, and we'll see you this summer. All right. Bye-bye.